Okay, we're going to get started. We got one Gary introducing another Gary, but the first thing we have to do is give Gary Timm a round of applause. He was inducted, an engineer inducted at the Broadcast Hall of Fame last June. I've known Gary Timm for a lot of years. He spent 37 years at WTMJ, and he's the guru of the EAS, and hardly anything more. I don't have to say much more than that, and he will help us and fill us in on all the latest and greatest. Gary?
Thanks, Gary. So I just wanted to start out by saying that I'm going to be covering a lot of topics in a short period of time. So if you've got any questions, maybe grab that NAB note sheet in front of you and make a note of any questions you have. And then I'm going to save about 15, 20 minutes at the end of the presentation so that I'll have enough time for questions from everybody. Well, I guess it's going to be a longer break than we thought. My second slide that we'll get to in a second, one of the things, in addition to taking general questions at the end of the session, I'd like you to think about this question while I'm talking, and I'm only going to be up here for about 25 minutes, and then we'll take questions. With the advent of people listening to the radio on smart speakers, does your streaming feed contain EAS alert audio? So I just want to do a short survey at the end of who is doing it and who isn't but probably could and who can't and what your ideas on that are. Is this supposed to be working again or? Oh, now it's red? All right. So we'll start by, that's just on my screen. That's resolution is up. We'll start with IPAWS updates. So these are updates on the test that just occurred. I have these preliminary data from the FCC since all the data is not yet in on Form 3. But for Form 1, it looks like about 1,000 more people filled out a form this year. That's kind of an interesting metric. Successful receipt is about the same this year, and it's down about 1% on relay, but again, all the results aren't in. IPAWS received first, and the Spanish alerts that were sent will be on Form 3, so I don't have those numbers for 2018. But a couple interesting numbers from FEMA. Spanish downloads, I was kind of encouraged to see that those are up about 50%. Last year, there were 646 downloads of the Spanish. This year, there's 968. So that's about a 50% increase. And also, the total downloads went from 8,500 to this year, 10,000. So if you kind of do the math, 10,000 downloads and 20,000 responses, it looks like roughly 50% of stations did get the IPAWS alert first. And a little note, the asterisk at the bottom there. So one thing I heard on the conference call after the test, they said that they had 9,000 audio downloads in the first 2 minutes. And when I looked at the broken out data, it was actually about 3,000 downloads in the first minute and 6,000 in the second minute, which works out to about 100 downloads a second. So I think that's encouraging to know that they are using Amazon Web Services, but nice to know that it can serve that many messages. And then the reminder in the corner there, ETRS Form 3 is due November 19th. In these preliminary results that I did see from the FCC, only about a third of the Form 3s have come in so far. So just a reminder that you need to do that. On the WEA part of the test, and again, a reminder that WEA is a cell broadcast with no return data from the phone, so there's really no hard data. My AT&T and Verizon phones both went off 5 seconds after I watched them push the button online. I know that didn't happen in a lot of cases, but Manitowoc County Emergency Management did a survey, 1,200 responses with a 90% success rate. Not quite as good around the country. Just looking at the EAS lists, about a 75% success rate. And DHS surveyed their 25,000 employees and got 66%. So it seems like maybe we did a little better in Wisconsin here than they did out around the country. So I just wanted to do kind of a quick show of hands survey. How many people did receive the test on their phone? And you put up two hands if you had two phones go off. I know a lot of us have more than two phones. Okay, that looks like a good 90%. How many didn't have it go off? Wow, one, looks like two people, three people. Wow, that's great.
Did they send just the one test?
They sent just the one test, yeah.
I received two.
Then my next question, and you'll notice at the bottom there, some reported receiving repeated alerts. How many people got more than one alert on the same phone? Wow, so we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah, but that shouldn't have come out on your phone, though. You don't normally get them on your phone, do you?
I do get them on my phone.
Not WIA alerts, probably,
not
though.
This.
Yeah.
But I had 1, 2, 3 alerts followed right next to.
If you guys feel comfortable, the ones that had repeating alerts, if you just want to write on one of those notepads your name, email, the phone model you have in the carrier. If you're comfortable doing it, and then just give that to me, and I'd like to kind of give that information to FEMA. They're working on getting those repeating alerts to go away, but they're looking for data on, especially the phone model. We're thinking that the problem is in the software of the phone itself, that it isn't updated, which is basically what I'm saying here. So what would cause missed alerts could be issues with the network's carrier, individual handset reception software, or if there's a call in progress. Again, if you're on a call or there's an active data session, WIA will not interrupt. The repeating alerts are most likely caused by software issues. The carriers do resend these alerts on a cycle, like once every minute or two. So anyone that newly comes into the area will get the alert if they were out of area when it was first issued. So that's the reason these repeats are coming up. Your phone is supposed to recognize these repeats. Unfortunately, solving these issues requires cooperation of the carriers and the handset makers, both of which are notoriously protective of their technologies. So we're hoping that between FEMA and the commission, they can work this out, but it takes some cooperation there. While we're on WIA, there have been some improvements lately to the system. Some of the current ones that are already in progress, carriers must support embedded phone numbers and URLs. For those of you who got the Amber Alert a couple days ago, you may have noticed that there was a clickable URL in there, which was very effective. It ended up crashing the Amber Alert website. But we know it works. So that's a little something we have to work on there. They got something like, I don't know what, 100 tens of thousands of clicks all at once. The second thing there, carriers must transmit messages to an area that best approximates the specified area, and they have to disclose targeting to emergency management agencies, and it's okay to use the WIA attention signal in PSAs. Things that are coming in 2019, carriers must retransmit messages that are issued in Spanish. They have to support 360-character messages if their network is capable. Otherwise, they can still send the current 90-character messages. They have to immediately transmit state or local WIA tests to the geographic area specified, and they have to provide their subscribers with a way to opt in to receiving these alerts. And lastly, the carriers must deliver messages that are specified by a circle or polygon to an area that matches 100% of the target area with no more than 1/10 of a mile overshoot. Again, that's supposed to be November of 2019, and we're thinking that most likely that's going to involve software on the phones using its GPS for the phone to figure out where it is instead of the carriers just trying to light up the towers in the affected area. So obviously there's going to be a lot of turnover before phones have that software to be able to do that. So it's likely going to go beyond 2019, but at least that's when they're set to launch it. As most of you are aware, NWS weather alerts are not on the IPAWS EAS feed. The issue there is that NWS continues to have software incompatibility issues with IPAWS, which is not expected to be remedied soon. The issue is that the NWS software modifies the issue time and the county in the alerts before transmitting them, which means that the IPAWS version and the MWS version can't be detected as duplicates. So until they fix that, there are not going to be any weather alerts on the IPAWS feed. Some quick numbers on IPAWS since its inception in April of 2012. Looks like about 37,000 WEA messages, 11,000 EAS messages, and they're now up to over 1,000 authorities that have authority to send IPAWS alerts. I thought some of these stats were kind of interesting regarding CAP itself, which is what IPAWS is based on, the Common Alerting Protocol. It was developed in the U.S. in 2004, and it's now adopted as a worldwide standard. To demonstrate that, the IPAWS workshops have been held lately in Hong Kong, Rome, Bangkok. 73 countries now have an operational CAP system. 25 are in the process, and 86 are investigating it. So it's interesting to see how worldwide this has spread, this CAP system. And again, that is the CAP logo. Yes, there is one. On to some Wisconsin updates. Just flip it so I get my notes here. So I'll start at the county level. Currently, we have over 25% of Wisconsin counties that are on IPAWS. The graphic to the left there shows the four steps they have to go through in order to get authorized to use IPAWS. They have to select IPAWS-compatible software, sign an MOA with FEMA, apply for public alerting permissions, and then complete IPAWS training. On the right there are kind of the details. With the IPAWS software, there's usually an annual fee, so that's the reason that a lot of counties are not up and running on IPAWS, because of the annual fee involved. They fill out the form, send it to FEMA. They then forward that permission form to the state. Then the state of Wisconsin here decides which counties and what type of alerts that particular authority will be granted permission to send alerts for. That's given back to FEMA, and then they set those permissions. So any alert outside that realm would be bounced back as an error. And then they have to take the IS-347 FEMA course online in order to have all four steps completed. These are the 20 counties that are currently up and running with IPAWS in Wisconsin, 28% of our 72 counties. And once we get the other six there that are in progress, we'll be up to about 36%. I've been, one of my latest missions, now that I'm retired and I have time to spend even more time on EAS, is making visits to some of the counties to try to convince them to start testing their IPAWS, not only for their own familiarity with their software, but I think it's good for broadcasters and cable operators to see that on their EAS log and know, oh yeah, my county has IPAWS alerting capability. So I started in Southeast Wisconsin, since that's the greatest concentration of IPAWS counties. Talked to all seven, visited three, and so far I've got two of them there in red that are up and running on testing. So it's kind of an uphill battle. They're very, very busy. So many things to worry about, but I'm slowly trying to get all the counties up and running. Also been talking with Dave Janda and Dane County, so hopefully they'll be up and running with testing as well. So you should see those on your EAS log on that schedule that's shown there. Some other statewide programs are Amber Alert Program. 2018, when I prepared this slide a week ago, there was only one so far. We've now had two this year, including the one on Monday. But you can see there's only about two a year. Since the program started in 2003, 34 alerts, an average of two a year. And the majority of those are issued only for limited areas of the state, not statewide. So we've divided the state up into what mirrors the nine EAS areas, and when they issue the alerts, they can decide which of those nine areas they want to alert, or they can alert the entire state if they feel it's necessary. And really, those low Amber Alert numbers are due to our excellent relationship with the Wisconsin Department of Justice, and they do a great job of vetting the Amber Alerts as they're requested. Another program that's resulting from our outstanding relationships with state agencies is our Broadcaster ID Card program that Michelle spoke of earlier. And again, these cards are for use by broadcast engineers to aid them in crossing police lines during times of disaster to keep broadcast transmitters on the air. General managers have to request the cards and sign an agreement that they understand this is only for transmitter engineers, not for news gathering. WBA has a part in the process in that they handle the application and database. The cards are issued by Wisconsin Emergency Management, a state agency. The cards are the same ones that WEM issues to state and local first responders. So every law enforcement officer has one of these in his wallet. So therefore, when we do appear at these police lines, it's a card that's recognized as a credible credential for use for proving who we are. These cards are based on the federal FIPS 201 standard, so we're hoping that in the future, surrounding states will also adopt this federal standard and we'll be able to use them across state lines. Our program began in 2006 with cards issued by Wisconsin Department of Justice and now by Wisconsin Emergency Management. These are our partners in the Amber Alert Program and on the State EAS Committee, and they were both very receptive to establishing these programs. For any of you from other states looking for a way to get this started, that was kind of our foot in the door, is to partner with our partners that we've dealt with for years on these various programs. We currently have 122 cards that have been issued, and as Michelle mentioned, we ask that general managers re-verify these cards on a yearly basis. The request went out on October 1st. So if your general manager hasn't checked with you on renewing your card, you might want to check with that person. Again, there's additional details for anybody that needs them that happens to be from another state that might be looking to do this on the WBA website at the Broadcaster ID page. To enhance our relationship with first responders and our understanding of what goes on behind those police lines we're crossing, broadcast engineers are encouraged to take the two basic FEMA courses that all first responders are required to take. This is everybody from the volunteer firefighters to the major departments all have to take at least these two introductory courses. And they are IS-100 and IS-700, which are introductions to the Incident Command System and the National Incident Management System. Both of those systems were created after 9/11 when they realized that all the first responders coming to the site it wasn't radio communication, they couldn't intercommunication, but their jargon was so different, they didn't know what each other was talking about. So NIMS establishes standard language for the incident commander is the person running the event and on and on. So if you want to take these courses, I'd highly recommend it. I've taken both of them, and I think it really gives me a lot of credibility when I'm talking with emergency managers, and it'll also help you, again, with the liaison with those officers at the lines. To find those, you just go on FEMA.gov, and you can do a search for IS-100 or 700. Courses are free, and they're taken online at your own pace. Therefore, they're called Independent Study, or IS. Once you pass these course exams, they'll be listed on the back of your broadcaster ID card that you have in your wallet. Another advantage of our excellent relationships with the state is that Wisconsin broadcast engineers have been invited to the 2019 SIMCOM exercise. Wisconsin Emergency Management conducts this annual statewide interoperable mobile communications exercise, or SIMCOM, where county and state first responder agencies from across the Midwest bring their communications vehicles to various sites within a sponsoring county for disaster communications exercises. So WEM has invited broadcast engineers to observe its 2019 SIMCOM, which this year and which next year will be held in Waukesha County. The major day for that exercise will be May the 2nd. It's an all-day exercise from 8 to 4. And then they're thinking the possibility of integrating us into the scenario next year. So I'll be contacting Wisconsin SBE chapters and see if there's any interest in doing this. We'll probably pick a particular time, noon or whatever, that everybody can assemble. And Paul Hughes, who is here today, who works for Wisconsin Emergency Management and is also a ham operator, volunteered to give us a tour, or we can just wander on our own and walk around to the various mobile communication systems. But man, look at all them radios. Who wouldn't want to go check this out? And that picture on the right is one I took at a past exercise I've been to. So they're very interesting to see what goes on. Again, in the emergency manager's world, it's really kind of a fun thing. For those of you who are new to Wisconsin and aren't aware, we have three email list servers, one for Milwaukee specifically, one for Madison, and one for the rest of the state. You don't have to quickly write down. If you need the URL, ask me for a yellow sheet when we're done. And that has the URLs on it. So that's it for our state topics. And we'll finish up with the FCC updates. They've adopted blue alerts, as most of you are probably aware. Let you know how blue, green, and silver alerts work in Wisconsin. The latest FCC rules that have been adopted, which David referred to a little bit, the status of triggered cap polling, and then we'll finish up with that question on EAS alerts on streaming and the general Q&A. So as far as blue alerts, in December 2017, the FCC adopted the BLU event code for use in issuing blue alerts, quote, when there is actionable information related to a law enforcement officer who is missing, seriously injured, or killed in the line of duty, or there is an imminent, credible threat to the officer. Blue alerts become effective in the FCC rules on January 18th of next year, and for WEA on July 18th of next year. And particularly, this BLU code updating and use by EAS participants is voluntary. So although your manufacturer will probably make the code available to you, you are not required to install it in your unit, and you're not required to program it. In Wisconsin, blue alerts would be issued by the Wisconsin Department of Justice, which has said these alerts will not use EAS. Instead, they'll be issued on the Wisconsin Crime Alert Network. The website picture on the left there is said network. In Wisconsin, rather than using EAS, the Wisconsin Department of Justice Crime Alert Network sends out a notice via email, cell phone, text, and fax for silver alerts, which are at-risk or vulnerable missing seniors, green alerts for missing veterans at risk, and blue alerts once they're in effect for the law enforcement officers at risk. And the Wisconsin Crime Alert Network is also used for amber alerts in addition to the EAS alerts that we send out for amber. So if you're interested in signing up for those, it's wisconsincrimealert.gov. The latest FCC rules that were adopted in July of 2018, effective in September of this year, PSAs can use the EAS attention signal with a FEMA-issued simulated header code. So if they do want to use that for any purpose, they should be sure to get the fake header code from FEMA first. August of next year, EAS equipment will be required to reject CAP EAS messages that include an invalid digital signature, and EAS equipment will be required to validate EAS header codes only when the origination date and time is not more than 15 minutes in the future and the expiration time is in the future. And lastly, effective after the Office of Management and Budget Paperwork Reduction Act approval, live code testing will be allowed in the rules without an FCC waiver, and EAS participants will then be required to report false alerts of which they have actual knowledge. And when this order was published, the commission went out of its way to say no action is required if the station does not have actual knowledge. So you're not required to figure out and vet every single alert that comes into your station and figure out if it's a fake alert or not, especially if it's coming from another agency or whatever. So if you don't have actual knowledge that you have broadcast a fake alert, you don't have to let the commission know. So the last thing I'll talk about in regard to the rules, catch up on my notes here so I don't forget anything, is what's been dubbed triggered cap polling. So the story behind this, with the advent of iPods, the FCC has been made aware that if a station receives the over-the-air broadcast version of an EAS alert before receiving the iPods version, the less informative broadcast version will be aired rather than the content-rich iPods version. EAS equipment manufacturers offered that they could employ what has been dubbed triggered cap polling, by which the EAS device would automatically poll iPods upon receipt of a broadcast EAS message to verify whether a corresponding cap message exists, and if it does, use the cap message instead of the broadcast EAS message. So this has been a problem ever since iPods was invented. We were telling the emergency managers, oh, you're going to have these great crawls on TV, but, oh, well, now we find out it's only going to be 50% of the time, depending on which one wins the race. So this will fix that problem. In a December 2017 order, the commission clarified that for state and local alerts, and only for state and local, not for national, the EAS rules do not bar triggered cap polling. So that allowed manufacturers to implement this feature as soon as they were ready. So the current status, Digital Alert Systems says it'll be in their version 4.0 software for release in early October, which is right now. So you should be seeing that update soon for your DASDEC. Probably be getting an email from DASDEC soon. That software update, I'm told, will also include support for Blue Alert and also ATSC 3.0 AEA, which we'll be hearing about in tomorrow's sessions. Gorman Redlich is working on this. Sage said it'll be ready at the probably by the end of the year in their next major release, and Trilithic already has it out there in a 2017 update. So to my question of the hour, question of the day, and I got about 15 minutes left, so plenty of time for questions. So I'm wondering, with the advent of people listening to the radio on smart speakers, does your streaming feed contain EAS alert audio? So how many people have EAS on their streaming? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. About 15, maybe? And how many have been sitting there thinking, I could do it, but I currently am not? Anybody who could do it that isn't? About half a dozen, maybe five. And how many people really can't do it? And I'm thinking a major reason would be the EAS unit sitting out at transmitter sites, and the streaming comes from the studio, so, you know. So how many people really can't do it? Nobody can't do it? Okay. So I don't know if anybody has any thoughts on this topic, fixes for this. I mean, I did see one thing on the EAS list that was interesting, where somebody repurposed one of the old pre-cap EAS units to receive the program line audio, and when your own station sent an EAS alert, would then interrupt their HD2 and HD3 as a way of getting it on their two sub-channels. I'm thinking you could probably do the same thing with your streaming, you know, to get it in there. There'd be a little timing gap, but, you know, that would be one way of doing it. But does anybody have any other thoughts before we get to the general Q&A? Okay. So my contact info is up there. I should have done the quiz, see who could come up first with how many, which kilocycles to tune into for Conrad. So my contact information's there, and still got 15 minutes yet. Questions?
Gary, once again this year, with the national test, I got a lot of phone calls because the test didn't work. And it seems to me that some people made boxes that allow the people who bought the box to turn off the attention tone. So when they send the message, they send a burst of FSK and get right to the spoken message. Well, my equipment looks for that attention tone, and when it ends, it turns on the voice recorder to record the audio. My impression is that's the way it's supposed to work. Another thing that happens is some boxes, when they get the attention tone and they realize, I mean, when they get the FSK and they realize that this message is for them, they turn on the attention, they turn on the voice recorder and record the incoming attention tone and the spoken message. It got so bad that I have received child abduction emergency alerts where I get the header code, I get attention tone generated by the box that's forwarding the message. And when they turn on their voice recorder, I get three more bursts of attention tone, then I get the spoken message, and just when the guy is going to tell me the license plate number of the getaway car, the 2 minutes is up. Now, this has been going on for a couple of years now. The same thing happened last year at the national test. So, has anybody here experienced the same thing where they get messages with no attention tone, or they get messages that have repeated attention tones?
I think the repeated attention tone is an ongoing issue. I know it seems to be a SAGE issue. I'm not sure if other boxes have this. The theory is the SAGE box is supposed to be listening for this attention signal and then filter it out and only record the audio, but it seems, I know even when I was working on my unit, it seemed kind of hit and miss. It wouldn't always do it, and there was a threshold adjustment, and that you didn't seem to be able to find the sweet spot with that either. But I mean, I know I continue to hear it in listening to Amber Alerts and everything else on the stations that I happen to monitor in Milwaukee. I'll hear the double attention signal, and yes, that would take away another 8 seconds from the message. One thing we did do for Amber Alerts is we asked the originators at that 911 center to keep their messages to a minute and 45 seconds, not use the full 2 minutes. So at least we had that 15-minute pad if you do happen to get a double attention signal. For not having any attention signal, the attention signal by FCC rules is required when there's an audio message. It must precede an audio message. So if it's not there, that particular EAS participant is operating in an illegal fashion. Other questions?
On October 3rd, for that message that went out to everyone, I know that my wife, who is visually impaired, did not get the audio portion that should have accompanied that message, and I didn't hear much about anyone complaining about that. Have you heard any issues regarding the audio portion being sent out to accompany the text? And that happens a lot with a lot of the other EAS messages as well.
Is this on a TV station or where?
Television and on her. Television and on her cell phone. On that primary broadcast that went out October 3rd?
Yeah, the cell phone won't have any audio.
But shouldn't it for people who are visually impaired?
Good point.
Right.
I mean, it's not something that FEMA is talking about. But
well, exactly. And I'm wondering, you know, who we want to talk to about that, because there are a lot of customers.
Are you ever able with any incoming message to have it speak its message on your phone? Is that? I mean, I'm just trying to think out loud.
Yeah,
if anybody's familiar with how to. I mean, is anybody?
Well, here's the thing. I heard someone mention an app, and because she's visually impaired, she has lots of apps, you know, to read the screen. Unfortunately, a lot of presentations on cell phones and on other devices, notebook computers. They don't have readable screens. A lot of it is graphics made in another way that can't be read by programs like JAWS and other accessible type applications. So I'm mentioning it just because.
Yeah, I wrote that down, and that's something I can relay to FEMA. And again, a WEA message is not a normal text message. It's coming in on a totally separate channel, and you'll notice when you dismiss it, it's not in your inbox, it's not in your messages, it's in its own little queue somewhere in the phone. So that might make it even more difficult to have it read back in an app, because it's not even a normal text message that you could get back to and say, read this to me. So yeah, but so that's a good point, though. I made a note of that. Thank you. Any other questions? All right, thanks. I'll be around today and tomorrow, so if you think of anything else, let me know. Thanks.